Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to Event Mavericks, a place where we challenge assumptions and garner solutions in event management. Let's dive in.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to Event Mavericks. I am Rachel Fusco, joined by my co-host, Sarah Kale. And we're really excited about today's episode. I totally looped and dragged her into this, but we are going to be talking to Nicole Silberstrom around procurement in particular. I can't wait for you guys to hear her background, all the things. She is a wealth of knowledge, super fun, and she's going to help us and like lay it out on the line for a lot of us who have to deal in the procurement side of things when we're pitching or we're trying to get on a preferred vendors list, whatever that is. So without further ado, I would like to introduce everybody to Nicole Silberstrom. Do you want to take it away and tell us all the things?
So I'm Nicole Silberstrom. Right now I own a procurement consulting company called ProcureSource Group. I am a procurement person through and through. I've spent 25 years in the procurement world. I consider myself an expert in procurement, and I know everybody loves procurement. So I look forward to talking about it here today. My primary focus recently has been in consumer packaged goods. So all fun things from beer, wine, spirits, to yogurt, to milk and juices.
Not to get off topic, but we might have to ask some questions around that because now my interest has been piqued. Yeah, yogurt and milk. Okay, let's talk about these perishable items.
Behind the scenes, I love it.
That sounds great. And then just for your knowledge for everybody, Nicole and I used to work together back in the day with MillerCoors, now obviously Molson Coors, and she was part of the procurement process to secure at the time Experian, which then shifted over to Meritz for the meetings and events team. And so it's really fascinating to get that point of view. And I know a lot of us who are listening deal or at least encounter procurement process, again, through the bids, trying to pick their brain and better understand. So I'm personally super, super excited about this because she's going to help us dispel some myths and be really honest in a lot of areas, which I think is incredibly valuable. Sarah, do you want to add anything before we get into our first topic? I know, especially since we just heard back from an RFP we didn't land it. So of course we're going to be, it does.
Which it happens sometimes.
And it was a very kind email, but of course it's one of those generic responses. That's a topic. Okay. We'll get there in a second. In the meantime, so first and foremost, I think what we'll start out with topic one. So a little bit different than our other formats. So in previous time, our previous format, we still have the three topics like we always do. The difference is we usually do objections with solutions. In this case, we're just going to talk about some different topics and there will probably be some solutions in there, but really just to get a better knowledge and some best practices coming out of this. So slightly different than our previous formats. So the first topic we have, Nicole, if you don't mind, leaning into what is procurement? Right. It sounds very 101, but it's good for people to understand, like, what is procurement, the value they bring to the company, what they're there to ultimately do. And so if you want to lean into that a little bit for us, give us some 101 stuff.
Sure. So procurement is the arm of the organization that is responsible for outbound cash in general. Unless it's something like a loan payment, for example, procurement is generally involved. Oversight of any financial obligation or commitment that is made on a company's behalf should be made through procurement or with procurement's involvement. So we are ultimately responsible for, of course, the output of the balance sheet when it comes to costs. And procurement's involvement in an organization can be non-existent. For a company that doesn't spend a lot of money on outbound cash, maybe a company only has employees, right, versus having a lot of outside services and goods, or procurement involvement can be massive. If you think about a company like a parts maker in the automotive industry, for example, where they're selling an airbag assembly, most of that is purchased goods that is assembled and then resold to an automotive maker. So 80% of the balance sheet is owned by procurement. So huge impact in organizations like that. Procurement adds value by ensuring that those goods and services are procured effectively, and obviously has a really large impact on the organization overall. We all know that utilizing resources to the best of our ability to get the best quality service and cost is ultimately important. It's really important in meeting and events. It's really important for all businesses. You know, that is procurement's key role. Now, how it's done differs from to company, and there are a lot of tools and processes, procedures, and best practices. But it's an evolution, just like anything else.
Well, and I love what you said: outbound cash sales. That if for anybody, yes. And for anybody who's listening, if you
think about it
for a second, even with meetings and events, and then to your point, whether it's goods and all the things, good services, all of it, the investment, like I'll talk about the MillerCoors or Molson Coors convention. I mean, that was quite a bit of outbound cash that was going for that one particular event. Mm-hmm. So having that investment reviewed and then ultimately sourced through procurement makes a lot of sense. So I think if people take a step back and just even apply that. That was even just that one thing was very eye-opening. I was like, outbound cash, that makes complete sense. That makes complete sense. That totally makes sense. So
yeah. And in the case of a meeting, if you think about it, if you're meeting, and I'm going to make up numbers, but if it's a $10,000 or $10 million meeting, there's a high probability that 9 million of it is outbound cash, right? Where the other million may be other fees or, the services to manage that meeting. But $9 million is the bulk of the cash. The bulk of the investment in a meeting is outbound.
Right. That company is putting out that money, towards this, purchase / investment. So 1,000%, that makes so much sense. That's a really interesting way. And then additionally, like obviously for that piece of it, but would you lean a little bit into also just the, I don't want to get into the selection because that's going to come down further, but more around the other attributes of procurement. So outbound cash, but also looking for consistency in product, right? Because I'm assuming it probably also plays into, for lack of like risk management and things of that nature. Like it's an all encompassing, like what you're looking out for the company in general.
So what we're looking out for. So we kind of have to get into the process of sourcing, right? Before we talk about what we're looking out for. The sourcing process, the number one step of the sourcing process is to identify the goods and services that are acquired with your stakeholders. And of course, we're always looking at consistency of quality, especially if it's an inbound item that you expect to see again and again, and that's repeatable. In some cases, it may be something that's totally creative. It's one time. You don't care about consistency. You care about creativity.
Right.
So before you even define what we're looking for, you really need to internally align on what we're all looking for, right? What does the organization really need and what attributes are important to this particular sourcing event or event in your case? But yes, if you look at just the checklist of procurement, there are always things like the health of the vendor, right? Making sure that they can deliver what they say they're going to. There is quality. There is consistency of supply and delivery. There is ensuring they have the capacity to provide more of a product, right? That inventory planning component. There's lead time considerations. So the list is incredibly long, but what is the most important for that event? That's where the procurement person has to be really good at understanding their organization and the stakeholders' needs to really identify what we're going to go after. So what do we bring is really the rigors to say, okay, let's all identify. Let's make sure we all set expectations and align on what our overall agenda is here with every sourcing event.
That's such an interesting way of putting it because I never think of that side of it, the health of a vendor. You know, we've been in business, Imprint has, through mergers and acquisitions for almost 60 years. So, but when you're working with potentially someone that's new to the business and has only been around for a couple of years, you know, if your event's a year out, are they going to be in business in a year? I mean, that's something to consider. I never think of that side of things because we've been around for so long, but that's obviously something that's very important. I never think of that. So that's an interesting that's interesting to consider, but yeah, that's obviously incredibly important.
all the startups.
Yeah. I never think of those side of things. I'm just on the other side of it. So yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure you've been burned. You burned once or twice. That becomes very important.
Perfect into topic two, which is, so for Sarah and I, and probably for a lot of the listeners on the podcast in general, is we go through, right, the three bid process. Now, we're just going to talk generically about the quote unquote three bid process. Mm-hmm. And of course, we want your point of view on that in general. And I know that it's subjective, but just any sort of, we always are curious, like, because of course, for me, I like to just be open and honest and transparent as much as possible. And it's so hard sometimes through that three bid process, because you're like, are we just spinning our wheels? I mean, because in some cases, depending on the bid, I mean, it costs companies money, right? If they're going to be building out renderings or whatever. So we would love to hear just your perspective around quote unquote the three bid process. And maybe we drop the number three and just talk about the bid process in general, like where procurement sees the value. And again, I would preface for her too, that it's subjective because not every company has it, right? And we were talking earlier this week and Nicole's like, mm-hmm. that's not like some hard and fast rule that everybody has to do. So if you want to talk just a little bit more around the bid process mm-hmm. and maybe debunk a couple myths, that would be great.
Okay. So in procurement, this is kind of a joke in procurement. We call it three bids in a cloud of dust. It's just any kindergartner can do it. It's not much, right? Now, not doing anything is probably worse than three bids in a cloud of dust, but you're really not going to get great results from three bids either. I mean, that's kind of the bare minimum. You really need to think about vendor relationships and sourcing in a lot more strategic way. And in certain cases, three bids work, right? You're going to a town, you're throwing an event one time, you need to get some balloons, and there are three balloon shops. Get three bids, right? That's a fine way mm-hmm. to do it. There are a lot of cases where it doesn't work. Right. We know we're going to have a convention in Miami. We're not going to get three bids. Right. We need to understand the dynamics of the supplier market, which in this case is likely one or two locations that can fit the needs of this group. So it isn't three quotes in a cloud of dust. It's really understanding the supply market. Right. What's available out there and then what your needs are. And compare it to the supply market and start to segment it that way. Do you have a lot of leverage? Do you have only a little bit of leverage? Do you have a big need? Do you have a small need? So three quotes is just, to me, one small way of answering that question of how do you source, but it isn't the ultimate way. And you can certainly learn a little bit through the process, but it can definitely be a waste of time.
It's nice to hear that, like, procurement, because I would say maybe not all procurements, but I know that you were very much like this only just because of my own personal experience with you. But it's nice to hear that there are procurements that actually take that level of interest, right? Because a lot of times, and I think it's maybe subjective to person or whatever that is, but there's been times where procurement will either take it upon themselves to be like, no, I think we know what's best and not take into account. So it's nice to hear that really part of the bid process is, to your point, being dynamic, being inquisitive, doing sort of that forensic, what's the need that we're really looking for? Because I don't know if that always happens from my experience on the other side sometimes.
Well, and that's how it appears sometimes too, that I run into that is that we're trying to get them to be more strategic, right? Like with what you said, Nicole, is, you know, if you're coming for balloons and there's three balloon shops, get three bids, right? But we try to encourage some of our clients that, well, if you know you're coming here and then you're going there, let's be strategic about it. We also operate events there. So how can we, you know, find some cost savings for you? And a lot of times they aren't thinking that way. So we run up against that. Sometimes we're trying to get them to think more strategically and perhaps they're not. And it's not necessarily procurement. I find that it's the planners that aren't thinking that way because maybe procurement and planners aren't speaking together. And so that's where I run into issues where it's like, if I can get them to communicate a little bit, a little bit more, then we wouldn't run up against this all the time. So that's something I'm personally passionate about, is how can we find cost savings for the organization by getting the entire team at the table, so we're all finding it together and then we can move forward together. And so, because that is, I'm sure Rachel, you've seen that a lot too. It can be very frustrating because we see it. We can see, God, if you're doing all these events in all these cities, I mean, there's massive cost savings here. So let's get a multi-year agreement together. You got 3 here this year, 5 here this year. We work with all these suppliers. We can negotiate on your behalf. We could save you thousands and thousands of dollars. Let's get your procurement involved. Let's get the planners at the table and let's do this. But it almost feels like, oh no, we have to do it this way. And it's like, but why? Why do you have to do it that way? When I'm telling you, we can save you tens of thousands of dollars. So it's just, sometimes we're up against this is the process. And it's like, but why? I'm telling you, we can save you tens of thousands of, you know what I mean? So it's frustrating on our end when it's not meant to be, whether it's with us or someone else, it's not meant to be, right? It's not meant for us to get the business. It's meant to save you. Like, we're really advocating for the client. And so it's frustrating sometimes where it's help us, it's help tough. You kind of a thing.
I think there's, in all companies, there are still so many ways to unlock savings. In a lot of ways, it's personal barriers, right? It isn't even a process. People fall back on a process because it's easy, right? If somebody says, get 3 quotes, we'll pat you on the back, you did your job, then people are good with that sometimes. But unfortunately, there are still huge gaps in procurement processes and interpersonal relationships between procurement and outside stakeholders. Obviously you see it in your world. It's in every aspect of procurement. I think it's the key challenge. Definitely.
Yeah.
And it's org design. It's everything. There's big hurdles. It all does sound easy, but actually executing it is really difficult.
Takes a lot. Would you say, like, so regarding just the RF, we'll just talk RFP process. Is it, and this is just your point of view, so maybe just sharing your perspective, because again, it's different perspective, different companies, different all the things, right? Would you say that how transparent, and okay, let me be clear about transparency. So when an RFP goes out, right, let's just take the merits RFP that went out at the time in 2010 or 11, right, when that was going through that process. How transparent or how much information from your point of view do you feel like you would share with the outbound RFP, meaning like, we are going, here's our process. We are going to bid 5 companies. We do a short list and knock it down to 3. From there, we make a final decision. Here's our timeline. Like, do you guys get into that or do you try to keep it very vague? What's sort of your... what's sort of that process that you guys, like, how much transparency are you comfortable sharing when it's kind of going out into the ether?
So any sourcing event that I run that is big like that one, that was impactful to many people within the organization, has 100% transparency. Mm-hmm. So back then, that was before we had sourcing tools and online tools that you all love so much, right? But back then, in that case, I created a SharePoint file, and every single RFI and RFP response was shared with everybody on the cross-functional team. But in terms of process, I started with a blank slate there. That was highly political. And procurement, we get our name on it and we get hung out to dry when things don't go right. But we don't really have power. So in that case, we didn't have power. We had power to run a process. We had power to make sure it was fair. We didn't have any power to select the final vendor, even though we had a couple votes. So in that case, our goal was to bring forward great vendors and give them the opportunity to shine and create a large cross-functional team that was very transparent with each other on what their goals were. So I procurement didn't have any goals, right? Our goals were to create a process, listen to the stakeholders, understand what their expectations are, articulate it, create a numerical value and measurement of success, create basically a scorecard and scoring methodology that we could all agree on, and then share that information with every single stakeholder on that team. And share the scores that each person gave to just create the most robust, transparent process we could have. And now there are tools that facilitate that. But back then, it was highly manual. Now, did everybody read everything? No. There was probably 1,000 pages of information there. And people had day jobs. So
that's a lot.
It was a lot. And so I summarized a lot, but then there's bias right there if I start to summarize. So I wanted people to look at the documents, but you know, there was obviously a time constraint.
I wonder too, like, so in this case with the outbound, so what about transparency outward? So out to the companies that you're submitting, that I would be curious. That's where I would be curious too. Like, so we've encountered this in this bid process is there's vague, right? You get kind of vague information, which I think everybody is obviously different. So that's why I was like, I would love your point of view, because while we're not asking them to, you know, tell us all the things, having a little bit of information like, hey, you're going to be one of five or you're, and then we're going to break it down. So do you, what is your point of view as it relates to sharing that level of transparency to the vendors or to the suppliers that you're actually submitting the RFI or the RFP, whatever it is to? What's that level? What do you, what personally do you feel comfortable like doing and sharing? And then of course, why?
I have always felt comfortable sharing. Gosh, I don't know if I should say always. I'm going to say generally because I might be telling a lie. But generally, always been comfortable saying the number of suppliers, right? So we started with 11. We down selected to 5. We had in person with 3. I have generally been comfortable with sharing scores. My scorecards are generally weighted scorecards with 4 to 5 categories. And then there is a scorecard at the end of it that demonstrates what companies' overall scores were. I generally share the score. Where I start to get hesitant to share information is when a company comes back and says, can you tell me why I scored only mid-range in this area and we feel we're awesome? And I could certainly understand why they feel that feedback would be good to hear. But that's when I feel that I'm going into information that, you know, was submitted under the guise of confidentiality. And I'm not comfortable telling them, hey, you know, we only gave you a 5 because your competitor does all this stuff in this area. And then they'll just use that information to, well, either become better quickly or respond differently next time. So I don't do that. Mm-hmm. And I discourage anybody on the team from doing that. I mean, ideally, nobody on the team is sharing information with vendors other than procurement. But we all know that is not the case. There are leaks all over the place. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to answers and, competition and how they fared, I don't tell them. I will tell them somebody did better, but I'm not going to tell them why in a certain category they didn't score as well as others.
If someone asks you who you ended up selecting, will you ever tell them who the vendor is you went with?
Well, eventually, because it becomes public. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Once we're in a contract with another vendor, I will. But it takes a while. That contract negotiation process can be slow.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Then there's another process.
Would you say, in regards to confidentiality and what you were talking about earlier, so my question from our standpoint, obviously, would be, receiving some sort of feedback. So if they pose the question, because I have asked back, like, is there anything that we could have improved upon? Mm-hmm. So to me, without breaking confidentiality. So like to respect what you just said, but then additionally for us, it's like, well, did we not communicate correctly? Or, you know, and maybe it's something like just lack of creativity, and maybe you can't even say that. But for us, I think it's interesting on our side too, because we're like, oh man, we'd love to know why. And maybe it just comes down to price, and that's okay too.
Yeah.
Like, but I can, it's like where, and maybe it's not possible, but if there was some way to bridge that gap of not pressing on confidentiality to your point,
yeah,
but then at least giving direction on the services you offered were just not what we were looking for, or I don't even know what's possible without crossing that line. That's just an interesting perspective to do that, to not break confidentiality. But then in the same instance, for me on the other side, it would be nice to know, like, they selected them simply because of, and maybe, and to your point, like, you could go back and do it, but in a lot of cases, maybe they can't. Like, right. For us, it could have been something like, well, okay, well then that we were way off base to begin with in some situations. Like, that's yeah. It's an interesting.
Yeah. And I have shared more, right? Just, I'm trying to generalize and say what I've shared, what I kind of always sure. feel like I can share. And that would be, hey, you scored mid in the procurement subsection, right? It wouldn't be just that you scored mid, you didn't get the highest score. It would be that you didn't get the higher score. And these are a couple areas where you could be stronger. So I would give them subsection, right? And if it's, you know, it would be in your creativity. It could be that simple. In the meeting space, it could be something like creativity, or it could be price, but I would give them that clarity. And then if there was any more, more information, I've shared it plenty. I just don't want to say I always do.
I think it's great that you share anything though, because I think, and Rachel, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like I see a mix. Some people won't share anything. Some people will give you a little bit, but I mean, from our side, I mean, we invest a lot of labor hours into these RFPs. So just even a one sentence response of some yeah. sort of feedback is very much appreciated, because, you know, when you don't get the piece of business, so much has been put into it. So something back for it is just very grateful that we can build upon. So, I mean, I think it's great that you provide any feedback.
Well, and I was going to elaborate on what Sarah was saying. I actually think by you setting the tone with a scorecard, by definition, right, that. How you're being scored yes. per category, per mm-hmm. whatever it is, that alone is more sometimes than we get in general. So the most recent RFP, yep. they're like, thank you, we've chosen somebody else. But there was no scorecard. I mean, there were hours spent, all this, like everything that yep. we did. But there wasn't even just a generalized, like, hey, here's your report card or your results, whatever you want to call it yes. to further. Mm-hmm. So then we're having to go back to ask. But then to your point, what you said earlier, by even just building out, here's her differentiator, mm-hmm. ladies and gentlemen, for even just building yeah. out the scorecard in categories based on who you're sourcing, that would be huge for us. Like, I would almost feel absolutely. Sad. I mean, of course, I'd probably have more questions, but ultimately
gives you more information
yes, than we mm-hmm. normally. It's just a one thing of like, sorry, yep. we've decided to move on. We really appreciate all your efforts. You guys did a great job. Very creative. We've chose somebody else. And it's like, well, that's even worse. Cause now we're like, but what?
I want more.
I feel like that's tough, because any company that I see that makes it to the final round is usually really good.
Mm-hmm. And yeah,
there's been many times that final round people don't get a great answer from me, because it yeah. ends up, especially I'm in sure your space, it kind of ends up being the dynamics of the people in the room. Right. So I, as procurement, can easily say your price was whatever, good or better. But when you've got all these creative people in a room, some of them strongly prefer one company over the other. And it's something that I can't even identify.
Yeah, you can't put your finger on it. It's just a gut feeling. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in those cases, I'm just straight with them. I don't know.
And that we would take that answer. That's great. Just to have an answer, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And you obviously can never see the pitch. You cannot see the pitch, so you don't know what what they did mm-hmm. that was better. But I, after sitting through enough of them, I firmly believe that it's not the pitch, that it's the relationship.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get to that in a second, because what I was, the next topic, well, the next topic is really just what's the criteria for selecting, like, what are some of the things, and again, subjective to who you're sourcing, right? Because you have probably various, right, based on who you're sourcing. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it would be interesting. So in our space, within the meetings and events space, what were some of the obvious, some of the things that you look for, some of those criteria pieces, because I think to your point, again, when you have one RFP, so in the case of what we talked about earlier, and it touches multiple departments, everyone's going to probably have different needs on some level. And then you have to, do you weigh all of them out? Do you select? So if you want to just maybe lean a little bit into some of the vendor criteria, like what you look for initially. And then to your point, you just said it from this last one. It's like sometimes then it just ends up being a gut and you talk to them if you're given the opportunity to actually pitch live, which will close out with something different. But for not being a
bitter party of two, for not, that is very frustrating.
Yeah. So for not though, be, what are some of those criteria when you're looking at the meetings and events space? Because I know you went through both, not only just selecting from the brand reception on an agency level, but then also a meeting and event, a meeting and event house or supplier like Merits, et cetera. So what were some of those things that you were looking for in those?
So when it came to the big guys, we had, and I'll talk about what I looked for first because I can speak to that better. So cost was a big one, obviously. And cost is obviously the price that you pay for the employees at the firm, right? That that fee. But what we were really looking for in that case was actually their procurement prowess. So we were really looking for scale and processes that supported them leveraging their scale, right? And in that case, just for background, we were looking for a meetings and events agency to manage over $100 million in meeting spend. And we wanted, wanted a larger company that could leverage our spend along with other companies and get the best cost for all of our goods and services that we were procuring. So it wasn't just cost for their employees, it was their ability to leverage those costs. Under the cost section, payment terms is a big one. Cash flow is important. And then financial stability, right? Just the knowledge that this company is going to be around in the coming days. Because as you all know, there are some really small houses that may not make it. And that is scary. The other is the account team, right? The people that you're going to work with daily. And that one can be difficult, right? How do you measure one person against the other, one resume against the other? But it is a really important one, and it's a little bit more arbitrary, right? And that's where somebody in procurement might try to come up with a method to give you a 1 through 5. But the stakeholders are going to rank it based on their past experience or what they've heard from other jobs, or, you know, I'll use a host of things. Hopefully they'll read the submission, but I don't know, maybe they won't. We always look at, the quality of the events that they've supported in the past, a lot based on, you know, satisfaction. We look at the account team, right? The ability to resolve conflicts, the ability to execute. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else in meetings in particular. I think that's about it. Can you think of anything big I'm missing? I haven't sourced a meeting in a long time.
I mean, to your point, the scalability, because I know very specifically in that instance, right, it was utilizing travel as well. Yeah. So internally, the BCD.
Creativity.
In addition to, like,
that was the big one. Oh, wow. Yeah. So creativity is a bucket in the meeting space.
Yeah.
Or marketing.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That would, and that's, so currently, would you say in the procurement, I mean, I would say yes, but in your realm, in your world, are you seeing a shift to where we're, I know Sarah can speak to this a little bit more, but really getting into the DEI, right? DE&I, sustainability, like a lot of that stuff is starting to surface, and it's interesting the layers. I don't know, Sarah, if you want to talk about this too, but I would be interested to hear Nicole's perspective on this as well.
Yeah. Nicole, are you seeing more of that come through? So we're seeing where we're a predominantly woman-owned company. So we're WBENC certified. And so we're finding that a lot of companies have a DEI division that sets goals for the year for the organization. And so the procurement process, as part of that, it has to make sure, you know, that we want to make sure that we, you know, hire 20% of the businesses that we do business with this year meet these criteria, right? Whether they're minority owned, women owned. And so are you seeing a lot of that come through where companies are requesting that they work with? So we're seeing that a lot. So from a sustainability standpoint, we're seeing that quite a bit from our clients that they're requesting that, you know, you use these materials. And so that's just now, we've heard about it a lot the last couple of years, but now we're really seeing it in action this year.
It's been a trend for as long as I've been in the business, and the goals get more and more aggressive every year. I think it really depends on the vertical that you work in. I think in software, for example, it's hugely important. I think in consumer packaged goods, because it's consumer facing, it's really important. I think in other industries, it's less important. I think the key thing to remember with spend, with MBA spend, is it's probably not that important if you're buying balloons, but it's probably really important for you to be MBA spend, because a lot of money runs through you. So the way it works is it's a credit system, right? So if you're not an MBA organization and you're running an event and it's a $10 million event, a large company won't care if the balloons are an MBE company, because it's $500. They don't have time for it. They don't feel like setting it up. It's not worth tracking. But if you are, then you can run everything through your organization, and then the company gets credit for the $10 million being 100% sourced through MBEs.
I see.
It's important, but it's also a game in a way. It's a numbers game, and the metrics are very simple. They're very clear. And it's to maximize diverse spend. There's no measure for quality of that diverse spend. There might be a really great marketing story in there, but that isn't the metric. The metric is the amount of dollars spent with MBEs. So just know that the person that you're talking about is measuring that. They probably don't want to spend too much time talking about it, though. Because that procurement person, they have the goal and they need to check that box that they did it, but they may not be passionate about it.
That's interesting, because I just had this conversation yesterday and I said, so if you go with us, you can check that box. And then I moved on, because I figured that's how it was. I figured I've recently become passionate about it, just because it's new. I find that it's newly actionable in our industry. Again, it's been a trend for a minute, but I find that it's, people are really starting to get into it a little bit more in our industry, because we are seeing some of the RFPs are a little bit more aggressive with the sustainability, with, you know, this and that. So it seems like it's being put into action more. So I'm starting to get into it more. But on the procurement side, again, I feel like it's more, okay, check, moving on. Like, we've got that metric. And not that that's a bad thing. People have jobs to do, so they just I get it.
Because what plagues procurement people every day is lack of delivery, lack of supply, huge price increases, right? Those are that's what keeps procurement people up at night. And they do care about MBE and achieving that goal, but nobody is calling them at 4 a.m. about MBE spend.
Okay, that's great insight.
Makes sense. It is great insight. So as we start to wrap up, because we are coming to the end of this little episode, we have two closing topics that we would love to hear all of the things. So the first one, don't you love this? She's like, oh my God, stop. So the first one is, do you have, or would you share some do's and don'ts when you're pitching to procurement, like some of your biggest pet peeves when you have had to deal with agencies, whether it was marketing agencies, meetings and events, whatever agency it is? Like, we would love to hear your do's and don'ts on that. And then we'd love to hear you talk about a little bit of what we talked about earlier in the week, which is the future, maybe a little bit of that sort of submission portal that we were talking about, things of that. So we would love to hear those two things.
So do's and don'ts. I would say, do know your audience, right? Make sure you know the people in the room before you head into the room. Know your logos, especially in the meeting space. Procurement isn't going to be mortified about a poor logo, but you have marketing people in that room and they see a bad logo and you're done. Mm-hmm. You can just walk out. It's crazy how sensitive they are to the logo. So make sure you work with your key stakeholder on that RFI, get the latest digital file, have the right logo. It's important.
So true. I have to laugh. I have to laugh because it is so, that is truth. Hashtag truth right there. It is the smallest mm-hmm. detail. And if you walk in, it's like having your zipper down. They're never going to forget. You're done.
Just leave.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Yeah, it's tiny. And then I'd say stick to the format, right? If stick to the format, and when you do your trial run, try to shoot for, if they tell you you have 2 hours, shoot to have the pitch done in an hour and a half, because it always takes longer. I've never seen anybody finish on time. And then the timing will screw things up. So you might have had something perfect to show and you missed it. So, so really plan that precious time, because the time is short. Even at 2 hours can go by in a second. So make sure you really show your key strengths during that time. And then, you know, there's, you can always fill up the 2 hours. So, so yeah, follow directions, no logos, know the room, the people and the players in it, and plan your time wisely.
That's great. Thank you for that. So now talk to us about these portals that we have come up against.
The bane of my existence.
And the future.
Yeah. I mean, you can expect more, right? Mm-hmm. There are, procurement departments have evolved a lot less than I hope they had in the past 25 years. I mean, we really haven't gotten that far. It's kind of sad, actually. I feel mm-hmm. like we still make the same mistakes we did 25 years ago. But the one area that has improved is the tools that are available to conduct RFIs and RFPs, and to some degree, contract management. So you can definitely expect to see more sourcing events come along that use digital tools to support that. When we go back 10 years ago and I issued an RFP or an RFI, it was in paper, maybe digital file, right? But it was attachments, right? It was attachment based. It was a SharePoint site. Everything I did 10 years ago is long gone, never to be seen of again. Now everybody uses these online tools, so the files are saved for a long time, right? For a good 10 years. So you can go back and learn from the past and understand how you got where you are. So I think the era of improved, or just the time of improved transparency in all things procurement is here, and it's only getting better. And with that, there'll certainly be some frustrations. I think it will put less of an emphasis on personal relationships than it did in the past. Yeah, personal relationships will still be important with the non-procurement people, but you know, procurement people's their desk, their seat will change. There will be new people flowing through those positions, and a lot more of the data will be housed in tools. So, yeah, you can expect to see a lot more tools. Cost savings will always stay, right? There's always going to be worries and fears of inflation mm-hmm. and cost increases. Quality will always be important. But digital tools is where the real changes are happening now.
It does, at least from our side, mm-hmm. challenge the agency side to get creative, right? Even just in the simple things that Sarah and I do, when you are, we're so technology bound, right? Emails, all the things, yeah. right? I mean, yes, for us now we're on video, we get to see and talk to each other, but even when you're trying to reach out to somebody, it's interesting. She and I have found a ton of success by just mm-hmm. recording a video and sending it with the email to say, hey, just a heads up, like this is what's happening. Just wanted to give you an update on your timeline. The amount of response, because it's like people are engaging on a different, and then they're not having to read, and then you're sort of providing this. It's really mm-hmm. fascinating. So I would be curious, like as these obviously digital submissions become more popular, they become obviously more streamlined as it relates to the procurement side. If there's going to be opportunity in there for us to like submit a video or embed it into some of our proposals where you guys receive those,
that already.
Because it's just going to challenge us to get creative.
I don't know if I was supposed to.
Yeah, because to your point, like we love the human connection, personality, all the things that there is something to it. But if you're not given that opportunity, how can you still be human on some level? And maybe it's not relevant. I don't know. Maybe it's just us having to let it go on the agency side to just do something different. But I think it would just be a challenge for us of how do we look different on paper or digitally than others if we're relying so much on just right the human side, if it's going to be going more down a portal.
Yeah, it will continue to go more by a portal, but that's really just facilitating the transaction, right? By removing email and digital attachments. But I think the winning strategy is the same that it used to be, from the standpoint that the best way to get the next client is a satisfied client, right? There are still the word of mouth recommendations. They happen all the time. People switch jobs. They've had a satisfaction with one company and they're going to use that company again. Because if we talk about when we selected Meritz 12 years ago versus how we would select Meritz today, the initial candidate pool was still selected the same way. It's from putting everybody's heads together and saying, hey, who have you seen execute great events before? And then all the names came in, right? So now the scoring process would have been digitized. All of the housing of those items would have been digitized. The input, whoever had to fill out the spreadsheet would have filled out a digital online tool and maybe had some more headaches, but ultimately the data would have gotten there the same way. So wouldn't it have been that different, other than there's a headache to get in the online tool, especially the first time. So it's changed, but the rules haven't really changed in some ways.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. It's almost brand awareness in some level. Like you just know who are those players that are out there, to your point. You start poking and prodding. So that is still really, that's actually great information to share, that it just boils down to that there's still that reputation. There's still that word of mouth that involves a decision. They're not necessarily always, you might Google to check out the company, but you're still getting maybe some initial information, right? From, to your point, somebody else's perspective or experience or whatever that is.
And I don't know if you guys are all allowed to do this. Nobody asked me if you could do it when I was in a position to say yes or no, but can you throw your own branding out there when you host an event, right? Because plenty of people have been to an event, so that's a great event. But the only thing they took away was the brand that was being promoted. They may have no idea who actually executed the event. But yeah, I think there needs to be more brand recognition to some degree, so people who've experienced great events know how to have them executed again.
Right. Like, who did this? I mean, I went to Inbound last year, just to kind of close out which is HubSpot's big, their annual event, kind of like Salesforce does Dreamforce. So similarly. And I was paying attention. Now for me, of course I asked, but I went around and asked. It was EA, agency EA, who ended up, as you probably know, or maybe it was Priyanka that came after, that took over the brand reception for Molson Coors and Miller Coors when VWV was out. So there was this, it was just, I went over and asked, but you, to your point, depending on who you are, it would be interesting on that level, however you ask or whatever that information gets to. But I mean, this particular episode for me has been really enlightening. I've gotten some really awesome gold nuggets out of there. So I'm seriously, you jest, but you know, it's hard when you're on the one side, which is why it's nice to invite the other perspective. You only see what you're given to see. So to hear like how the portals work, and then for you to follow up with like, that's just transactional. That's still not the brand awareness. It's still not the word of mouth. It's still not the reputation that we're relying on. That's just the that's just the paperwork, right?
And that's the Wizard of Oz.
We saw behind the curtain.
The paperwork. Yeah. It's the paperwork. It's the chief procurement officer says, I want to be able to access what you're doing every day. So all the buyers are pointed into one direction in a portal and it's all there. But it is everything else that's happening in the background is the exact same.
Right. And so that's nice to hear, because you don't see that on our site. We just see this portal and we're like, oh shoot, how do we celebrate our personality? And the truth is they probably just didn't know who we were and that we don't have a reputation that they could. So whatever it was, it's nice to hear. So there have been some really good gold nuggets in this episode. I know for Nicole, she's like, oh my goodness, but this was fantastic. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to like,
well, I appreciate being out here. It was great to see you.
I know. It was good to see you too. This was really fun. So we will say to all of our viewers, I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Nicole, I'm going to send you the episode. You're going to see your face on YouTube. So get ready.
No, right? It's like,
nobody wants to see that and I will not watch it. Or listen.
I'm going to tell.
No, thank you.
Okay. So in other words, we'll give you all the things so you can avoid it, I guess. Whatever you want to do.
Okay. Thank
you. We appreciate you giving us some enlightenment on this and really, really appreciate your perspective. This was fantastic.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening.